Welcome to the Industrial IoT Spotlight, your number one spot for insight from industrial IoT thought leaders who are transforming businesses today, with your host, Eric Walenza.
Welcome back to the Industrial IoT Spotlight. I'm joined today by Vinay Nathan. Vinay is CEO and co-founder of Altizen, which is based out of the Bay Area and Pune, India. Altizen's a company that focuses on the industrial internet and specifically on sensor data applications and SDKs. In your experience, have third-party organizations, so for example, the OEM equipment manufacturers or supply chain partners or customers, have they been highly engaged stakeholders? I ask because in some cases, certainly the OEMs, for example, have a stake in the data that's coming off their machines. They would like this certainly for their R&D or their manufacturing operations. Supply chain partners or customers would certainly appreciate visibility in some cases into operations so that they can improve the performance of their organizations, or visibility into, for example, when product will be arriving from a customer standpoint. So is this typically something that would be a consideration in a project, or do you focus primarily on solving the primary objective, which is often related to productivity, and then these would be potential, let's say, add-on use cases or uses of the data, but maybe something that you're not directly engaged in?
So in the smart manufacturing use cases, the primary objectives are laid down by the end users and the enterprises, and you know, you kind of have to focus on fulfilling that. The OEMs, but to your point, right, they obviously are a vested interest or stake in kind of understanding what's happening. But you know, it's important to draw that line in terms of saying, hey, if this is about smart manufacturing and digital transformation, the end user is the person who's going to call the shots. You know, in some cases, some of this data may be going back to the OEM, but that's a rarity. It's you know, the OEMs, I think for us, at least from our perspective, you know, the equipment manufacturers have been more relevant for the condition-based monitoring or remote asset kind of situations where a pump manufacturer wants to know how the pump is working on the field, or the sensor manufacturer that I mentioned wants to know how their sensors are doing on the ground, right? So the asset performance management use cases are where we have found, you know, there is a, you know, a direct lockstep with the OEM, and you're driving that. And very often that sale is also made to the OEM. So, you know, at least that's what we have seen. In the rest of the cases, you know, being able to, the OEM is essentially an enabler. We, of course, interact with them to understand in some esoteric cases if there's a protocol that, you know, is not readily available, whether they can enable that, provide support for that.
You mentioned earlier that you have this report tracking ROI by use case and industry. Would you be able to give us a quick kind of executive summary of some of the key findings that you found through your research in this?
We captured 4 years of work that we had done, you know, around 62 odd connected plants at that point of time that we had. And so, you know, typically when you're looking at productivity, quality kind of use cases as being the primary drivers, we've tried to look at, okay, you know, what are the key impact metrics that are there, right? So let me take an industry like automotive, you know, to quickly walk through an excerpt. And just to your point earlier, this is available off the web. I'll more than happy to share it for you to have a deeper look at. So take an industry like automotive, right? And out of all the plants that we had got connected, let's say what we realized was 46% of the use cases that were enabled was around productivity improvement. And that was followed by condition-based maintenance as being 18%, and energy was the other big one at 24%, right? So automobile, this was kind of the main use cases that the customers were looking at for an industrial IoT project. And when you look at the ROI impact, right, in terms of what is the payback period for a lot of this, so something like productivity improvement, which is really core, right, we find that it is a great use case to start off with, because, you know, in more than 65% of the cases, the ROI is within 6 to 12 months for a lot of this, right? So that is a great metric to work with, and it allows us to guide customers in saying, hey man, if you are an automobile company, you know, that's what we would, our salesperson would talk to you about in terms of saying, hey, let's look at the productivity metrics that you have, and let's look at, you know, what it takes to get up and running with that, such that, you know, I'll give you an ROI in, you know, 12 months against what you're trying to do. So that's one example. I hope that illustrates the point. And we provide this similar kind of data across 5 or 6 verticals against projects that we have done.
Do you see a widespread in terms of the success of companies that might be related to, certainly could be related to their operations, but also to their ability to implement or to actually get their shop floor to adopt the technology? Or do you find a kind of a fairly narrow spread of in terms of the actual ROI?
There are certain sectors that, I mean, the nature of the use cases change. And if you follow the right kind of use cases for the right verticals, you are in a better position, right? So let me give you an example of what I mean. So let's say discrete industry like automotive, right, which traditionally has not invested because of the high capex and it's a thin margin business. They don't, you know, there's a lot of human element involved in the process and all of that. So very often a lot of the analytics layers or the, you know, the historian kind of product lines, for example, have never found purchases in these markets, right? So in this kind of a segment, the automation and visibility provided at a price point such that the ROI is available in 6 to 12 months is something that is hugely attractive to that industry, right? So it's not probably environment, health and safety that clicks first if you go to discrete, right? Whereas something like that clicks great in the process side, chemicals and things like that, where, you know, the downtime matters a lot more. The fact that you're able to correlate some of these data sets and be able to give early warnings or condition based on the condition of an equipment, right, is a no-brainer very often, right? So you have to look at, you know, getting the right use case in front of the right customer. So that tends to make life a lot easier. The second side of it is, you know, now we are into the fifth year of our journey, right? We had to do a lot more evangelism and sit next to the executive and explain what the benefits are kind of stuff in the first couple of years, 3 years of our journey. Today, by and large, what we are finding is enterprises have at least a first level view of what they want, right? And and then you do have to do some more, but you're not starting from the basics, right? Pretty much across the board, there's a secular kind of trend to say that industrial IoT is important to me, and I now need to understand what I need to start first. That tends to be more the question as opposed to should I be doing any of this.
I think that's a great point that you need to identify the right use case for the right company, right? You're probably right that now companies are getting a stronger understanding, both at the executive level, but also at the more operational level, what might make sense. I think we saw certainly in China, but I think also globally, a lot of situations earlier where there was significant top-down pressure to adopt something, and then probably the right use case was not being adopted, right? Because there was a lack of clarity in terms of what that right use case was. If we kind of put your particular technology to the side and think about what have you seen differentiate highly successful customers from less successful customers in terms of their internal decision-making process, their execution process, what recommendation would you make to a customer as they start out on this journey in order to help increase the overall ROI of their implementation?
I'll go back to a point I mentioned a little earlier, the cross-functional team, right? To pretty much every successful implementation that we have had has had an element of a cross-functional team where you have paired, you know, a business unit person, you know, from the actual function with an IT person who's also equally committed to the whole process, right? Top-down is a given. Unless you have top-down acceptance or push, it's always difficult to drive a new change kind of thing down the hierarchy, right? So you need that at the top. But even after doing that, getting the right combination of the cross-functional team, you know, increases the probability of success multifold. The second thing is this critical aspect of choosing the right project to start with. Rather than going for big bang stuff, very often it makes sense to start small, iterate, see if it is working for you at some level. You may not have the entire roadmap for the next 3 years chalked out when you start, but at least you need to have it for, you should have it for a limited time frame. You know, if you're unsure of which 4 projects to start off with, define smaller versions of those that, you know, you can get done in 3 months, and then make a pick of what you want to scale, right? Iterative work, right, is something that is very common to the IT industry, but not necessarily so in the context of the industrial world, right? So that mindset of being able to experiment fast, and you know, thereby arrive at the right starting point for your journey, goes a very long way after the cross-functional team angle that I mentioned in terms of enhancing the probability of success.
Last question from my side, Vinay. What is the most exciting trend, either in technology or in business, that you've started to see emerge over the past months that you're excited to follow and strategically that you're asking your team to focus on in the coming 12 or 24 months?
Oh, this is always a pet question. So thanks for asking that. I think one of the things that there are two or three trends that excite me in a big way. First up, and this is one that is well and truly underway, the super intelligent edge, right? Being able to drive distributed intelligence, and this is vital for us to drive wider use case adoption in several verticals. So this is a here and now kind of activity, but still there's a lot of work to happen to realize products that are working on the ground in this area. So the super intelligent edge is something that is here and now that I believe in, and we are putting a lot of resources and effort at kind of making that work the right way. The next level that is interesting and exciting to me is the data commons, the industrial data commons. So we, for example, are working with several corporates. And in India, we're part of a government initiative along with corporates to create an industrial data common for a certain set of clusters in automotive in particular, where performance benchmarking data and data of machine utilization and things like that are available in an anonymized format, but available for people to understand, data scientists to work on from multiple angles. So creation of that data commons is something that is super interesting and exciting to me, because that is when you start deriving a higher order yield or gain from doing all of this digitization, right? Making this data available for both OEMs to look at, end enterprises to look at, best practices evolving from benchmarking and things like that. So the data common, we are seeing several such initiatives happen around the world, and Germany has a few already in place, and India, for example, we are involved in this one. So I'm pretty excited about that. The third one is something that across the SaaS world is a transition that is happening, in the sense that you're becoming a value as a service player, right? You're not just selling subscription and IP licenses and things like that. At the end of the day, you're tying your outcome and your future to the fact that on a continuous basis, an enterprise is actually getting value from what you're doing, right? So from a productivity perspective, I mentioned metrics like OE and things like that. You now are getting into situations where you're driving outcome-based stuff for the end customer and saying, hey man, I will drive your OE to this, increase it by 15% in 12 months and maintain it at, 70 or 80% or 90% over the next 3 years. And that is really the business value that I'm driving to you. So that additional step, which may not be, in a consortium format more often than not, will help wider adoption and also drive, enterprises to more readily be accepting of these solutions, right? So I think that is another big trend. And there's a beautiful book written called Value as a Service by the founder of Coupa. And I see a lot of that also happening, in the sense that now we are working very closely with our system integrators on the business outcomes, being deliberate about what we are, in a position to promise as an outcome, and even taking some of that as a yield back to us, right? So these are the three trends as I look at it that, over the next 12 to 24 months will take shape in a more aggressive manner. One is the super intelligent edge. Second is to do with the industrial data commons and, how much of that can have an impact on industries as a whole. And the third is to do with a value as a service kind of objective around providing SaaS, a productivity app to an end customer, or a condition-based monitoring app for end customer, right? These three are kind of things.
Let me quick follow-up on the second, the data commons concept. So I was speaking with the CEO and founder of Turbine, which is building an IoT exchange. Are you familiar with the company by chance?
No, I haven't.
Turbine, they're based out of the Valley. They've been in operation or kind of in stealth mode doing R&D for 2.5-3 years now, and they just entered Alchemist Accelerator, so I think we'll probably see more of them as they start to go into pilot phase now. But they're building a data exchange right now, focused on transportation data, because that tends to be more publicly available. Then you have, you know, IOTA, for example, which is more of kind of a based on a blockchain, but I think also focused on enabling machine-to-machine exchanges. One thing that, because I think this concept's fascinating, right? But one thing that comes up often as a challenge is that if you're looking, for example, at public transportation data, that data from a, let's say, an organizational standpoint is relatively easy to work with because it's already in the public domain. So it's just around tagging the metadata and structuring it and maybe building contracts to govern use around that. If you're dealing with manufacturing data, then the technology problems can be addressed, but the legal and contractual challenges are immense. You've been mentioning kind of a more government-oriented approach. These guys are taking very much a free market approach. How do you see this evolving in terms of companies being willing to share their data for, let's say, for the greater good or by monetizing it? Because obviously there's a ton of value that's being locked up right now. How do you see this emerging so that that value can be released into the market?
Great question, Eric. If you look at a smart manufacturing report, right, for example, it is an example of how abstracted data, derived kind of information can be shared across an entire vertical. That's your ROI, kinds of equipment that get connected, highlights of trends, and things like that. That is something that we can offer as a data service, which we are providing right now in the form of a report. And you can, of course, there are certain data service APIs that we already exposed to some of our system integrators for these higher order applications. Okay, so this is the free market approach, as you said, right, where it's going to be driven around that kind of approach. The second is where there are data commons being created that are public. For example, we support a project called watchyourpower.org. What this does is it gives you power quality and availability information at this point of time across about 600 villages across India, and then in other three other countries as well, Indonesia and a few others, right? If you can imagine what this unlocks, right? Power quality, but the quality is where it gets interesting. Because now, for example, for manufacturing, if quality is not up to scratch, it has equipment failure issues and things like that, right? As you can imagine, now this is like a public funded project around just providing power quality and availability. Somebody could take this data and build a more sophisticated application that is more focused on saying, hey man, this kind of equipment, and if you go and deploy in this part of the world, you're going to have these kinds of problems. Or when you design, you can look at where your user is and then look at designing a friend. So this is a second kind of situation where it may be a public works project. Government is not involved in this. It's actually privately funded. But the point is that the data is public, right? So the first was proprietary data, but available in an abstracted format, anonymized format, such that no legal implication is being created. Second is where it's a privately funded project for public data, right? And the third is the government kind of approach, which I mentioned earlier, where the idea here is to provide a tool bench or a workbench where pilots can get executed. One is, of course, increasing awareness, right? And second is a whole bench of, piloting infrastructure where the infrastructure is provided by the government or it's a public-private initiative in combination. Everything that happens there is available for the community to consume, whoever is a subscriber there, right? So these are the three different models that I see emerging across at least what we have had an experience working with. And I'm sure there are more, but I hope this helps you draw a picture.
Absolutely. It's a very structured way of thinking about it. I think this is very, very fascinating aspect of the market that has huge potential, but really has not been developed as rapidly as platforms, sensor technology and so forth, just because of the legal and organizational challenges, right, on top of the technology challenges. So yeah, I appreciate your very lucid kind of overview of how this might develop. We'll go ahead and put those in the show notes. Vinay, thank you so much for taking the time to talk with me today.
Appreciate it a lot, Eric, and it has been a pleasure participating in this conversation. Thank you.
Thanks for tuning in to another edition of the Industrial IoT Spotlight. Don't forget to follow us on Twitter at IoT1HQ and to check out our database of case studies on IoT1.com. If you have unique insight or a project deployment story to share, we'd love to feature you on a future edition. Write us at eric.walenza@iot1.com.